Leave you alone.
No one said anything to me about that. But I saw this story, and I thought this will make Greta Thunberg smile. Because it actually makes me smile. Because one way or another, and let me be very clear about it. One way or another, the world as you knew it 2 weeks ago is over. It's done. We now live in the world of this virus. And we're going to be living in the world of this virus for the next 6 weeks, maybe the next couple of months. Depends on what happens with it when it gets warmer or if it burns itself out. But the things that are happening, all of the events that are being canceled, all of the business that is being lost, all of the changes in lifestyle that people are being asked to make are going to ripple forward. And we're going to find ourselves living in a very different world on the other side of this. Not just because there's going to be shortages of goods in different places, but because, as with any crisis, and you know, those of you who recall 9/11, which right now is most people, although we are now, you know, dealing with the post 9/11 generation getting into college and the rest of that, the majority of us still remember 9/11 and remember what life was like before 9/11 and after 9/11. That's happening now, only it's happening in slow motion, and it's happening in a series of small steps that you're going to wake up one day, a couple of weeks from now, and you're going to be like, man, my life is radically different than it used to be.
Yeah.
I remember when we had public gatherings and hand sanitizer, and you could go to sporting events. There's going to be a lot of stuff canceled. They're talking about postponing the Olympics, on and on. Anyway, this one caught my attention, and this was from CBS. This was on Monday. Twitter, not usually a company that I'm going to say nice things about. Twitter tells all of its employees to work at home because of coronavirus. Twitter is asking its entire workforce of 5,000 people to work from home, part of its effort to keep employees safe and prevent the spread of the coronavirus. The company said working from home was mandatory for its workers in Hong Kong, Japan, and South Korea, where there are higher rates of the COVID-19 disease. Quote, "We are working to make sure internal meetings, all hands, and other important tasks are optimized for remote participation," human resources executive Jennifer Christie wrote in a blog post. Quote, "We recognize that working from home is not ideal for some job functions. For those employees who prefer or need to come into the offices, they will remain open for business." End quote. The decision comes after Twitter halted non-essential business travel for its employees and pulled out of the South by Southwest conference. That's going on. South by Southwest is going to happen as of now. Expect that to change.
Yeah.
Other companies such as Google and Amazon have halted non-essential employee travel because of the outbreak, but Twitter's decision to ask employees to work from home goes beyond the precautions undertaken so far in the United States. Now, this was on Monday. As of today, there are a few more companies that are doing this and are basically saying, we're shutting our offices down, you're working from home.
I would say this will start a very good trend.
I don't know. Did you see the satellite pictures from China that were making? They first started making the rounds last week online, and they resurfaced yesterday. CNN ran with this, among other places. Weather satellites flying over China have noted that the smog that normally hangs over central China is gone.
Wow.
It's completely disappeared.
Oh, yeah. NASA images show a decrease in China's pollution related to coronavirus shutdown.
Yeah. And they show one of the stories.
Wow, that's amazing.
Shows a week, but yeah, it's just gone. You know why? Because the factories aren't running.
I was going to say, yeah, there's like a tiny bit over Beijing and that's it.
Now, one of the things.
And usually there's like a black smog-tastic.
And Beijing is a massive. I don't know how many million people live in Beijing, but it's massive. And it's wintertime, so people are going to be, you know, using heating and, you know, there's a lot of electricity being used. You're going to get there. But the rest of central China, the air is clear. Okay? I have been saying for quite some time that if you want to get serious about climate change, one of the things that you have to look at is the question of whether or not we all need to get into our cars or get into subways or whatever, get into Ubers and go into the city every single day. Twitter is saying, no,
no,
work from home.
Yeah.
And this is why I say the world is changing. Because on the other side of this, Twitter may discover we work just as efficiently from home. We don't need all of our people piling into an office every single day.
Well, and I mean,
once in a while, yes, maybe once a week. But you know what? Telecommuting is working.
Well, it's just like I believe I've told you about. I have a friend from high school who her best friend from college lived down in, I forget which saint is the American ones, but one of the American Virgin Islands. She goes, oh, this is so amazing. I wish I could do this. She goes, well, don't you have the capability of working remotely for your job? Well, you can do this. And now my friend lives in the U.S. Virgin Islands and works for State Street. She comes back, I think, once every 3 months for, you know, like the quarterly meeting or whatever. But she can do it all. She can do all that she needs to do from the U.S. Virgin Islands, especially because she's still in the same time zone or still maybe she's one time zone off. But I mean, it is. This is like a very cool opportunity for us to see how much really can just be done remotely on the internet. I mean, in this day and age, we have not been utilizing the capabilities of the internet in these terms, mainly because of keeping up the status quo. It's just always been the way that you get up at whatever time you get to an office by 9 o'clock. That's always been the way. Now this is introducing an opportunity to try, not an opportunity even so much as the fact that this may become a necessity is an opportunity to look and go, hey, we can even do this when there isn't an outbreak.
We have an entire class of executives in this country that see FaceTime and office time as the only time that matters. They want you behind your desk. They want you behind your desk every day. They want you behind your desk for 14 hours a day. Other than that, they don't think you're being productive. Okay? Something like this fundamentally threatens that approach to management, because you can't have all your people in the office, because if one of them gets sick, the office is shut down.
Mm.
And the office needs to be open probably for some core functions, you know, for some things that really need to be done in the office. So if you want to keep the office open, you got to send all the non-essential people home. And if we want to cut down on greenhouse gas emissions, we want to cut down on carbon dioxide emissions, we have to get cars off the road. The more cars you get off the road, and this is the thing, we don't need to get every car off the road. We need to get about half of the cars off the road, 2/3 of the cars off the road.
Which should feasibly be doable.
Because if you do that, then all the cars that need to be out there, all the UPS trucks and the semis and the first responders and the construction vehicles and all the rest of that, they're not sitting in traffic all day long. They're actually moving efficiently.
And getting to the places that they need to go.
Yeah, they're not belching exhaust gas into a 5-mile area for 12 hours a day every single day.
Well, I was going to say, I forget who the artist was, but there was an artist that did photographs, like a photographic rendering of, it took people outside of each thing, but it had people stand like, certain amount of people on a bus, if it was just buses, it was all on the same street, just buses on the street, and had all those people stand there, just bikes on the street, had all those people stand there, cars on the street, and it showed
the more that you can eliminate people driving to the office to do things that they could just as easily do from home with an internet connection, the less exhaust you're going to generate, the less fossil fuel we burn, the less fossil fuel we need. Okay, we have to accept where I lose it with the environmental activists and Greta Thunberg in particular is when you start saying we need to stop the fossil fuel now. Well, we can't do that because
society will come to a halt.
Yeah, well, not just that society will come to a halt, large billions of people will freeze to death.
Yeah.
Okay, because we need electricity. And guess what generates that? Fossil fuel. Okay, we need heat. Guess what generates that? Fossil fuel. If you're in a city, you might rely on steam. Guess where the steam comes from? So either you make everything nuclear and then get rid of the fossil fuel, or we keep the fossil fuel going. What we don't need is more and more and more cars on the street. Now, the ancillary benefit of this, which I mentioned earlier, is that demand for Uber and Lyft has gone way down because people aren't going out. That's a good thing because we don't need all these Uber drivers circling the cities all day long, making the traffic jams worse,
yeah.
which they have been doing, which no public official wants to acknowledge. Everybody says, well, we're going to do a study. Where's the study? I don't need the study to tell you that when I sit in traffic in Boston, every single car around me in traffic has an Uber or a Lyft sticker in it. Every yeah. single one of them. Or I'm in back of a delivery truck. Didn't used to be like that. It used to be people driving to Boston in the morning, all the parking garages fill up, and you could drive around the city all day long, no problem.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the day, boom, all the traffic goes out. Now, Boston is log jammed all day long.
It's true.
Not because businesses have changed their hours, not because banks started operating from 11 to 7, but because you have ride shares all over the place.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the other day I rode into Boston with my father. My father had to drop something off somewhere down there. And he said, like, he kind of asked me to come with him at the last minute. And this was around, I want to say it was probably around like 10, maybe 10:30. And which typically, you know, like you said, back before this whole rideshare phenomenon started, I remember being a little girl and it's like 10, it's like, I'd say 9:30, all of a sudden, no more traffic.
Yeah.
My dad told me, like, and I saw it with my own eyes. He said, I'm so glad I had you come with me because we took the carpool lane. If we hadn't have taken the carpool lane, it would have taken us about 5 times the amount of time to get there.
Yep.
Just watching all of the cars still sitting there in bumper to bumper traffic well after what is considered rush hour.
Yeah. It's rush hour from 7 in the morning until 7 at night.
Yeah.
In the city of Boston now. Pretty much. And if there's an event going on, it goes even later than that.
Yeah, like even, I mean, I get out of work at 3 o'clock in Hanover, and I make a kind of a game of what time should I leave for the radio show in Medford? Because I live in Quincy, and
yeah.
I always leave my laptop at home. And like, even if, like today I left a little later because I stayed at work late. But, you know, last week I get out of work. I went home immediately. I grabbed my laptop. I immediately drove into Boston. So we're talking like 3:30. Still sat in traffic for
yeah.
an hour.
Yeah.
Nobody's out of work at 3:30 unless their boss is really cool.
Well, the yeah. I mean, some people are, but not enough to generate that
level of
traffic.
Not people working in downtown Boston.
Yeah. So, you know, there are benefits here. And if some employers can be convinced to let a greater share of their workforce work from home, we can actually do something meaningful. Because if you're going to reduce carbon emissions, and if you're going to reduce fossil fuel consumption, it has to be driven by a large number of large employers. And there are certain realities now that we can't avoid, like all of the extra UPS and FedEx and postal trucks on the road, because everybody orders everything online.
And of course, too, I mean, we're not going to, like, there are, acknowledging there are certain jobs that you have to go in. Like, I suppose I could forward the calls, but like, I answer all the phones at the office.
Yeah.
I have to actually be at the office
yeah.
to do that.
Yeah. That,
but
that's one thing. Doctors need to be at the office.
Yeah.
Lawyers need to be at the office. You know, bank tellers, baristas, need to be at their place of employment, okay? People, marketers don't need to be at the office. People who are doing research and, you know, writing proposals and all that sort of, they don't need to be in the office. And if they don't need to be in the office, they should not be in the office.
Mm.
This is a realistic goal that we could set in the United States, which is we're going to work with business to find a way to get 20% of the cars off the road by the year 2025. This should be a priority. This should be part of the platform for whoever is running for president. We're going to take 20% of the cars off the road.
Because there are absolutely...
daily commuting by 2025.
Yeah, there are absolutely so many jobs that could be done from home that are not.
Can be done.
And I mean, from a... what was I going to say? From a standpoint of an employer, because that means you don't need to rent as big an office.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, just thinking about that alone should sway you a bit.
Yeah. Well, like I say, we have this class of C-suite types, corporate executives. The only thing that they see is our people at their desks. That's all they care about. They don't care if those people are efficient. They don't know if those people are actually doing any work. You know, they could be sitting there playing Pac-Man all day long. Or they could be sitting there torrenting movies or watching Netflix all day long. As long as people are at their desks, they're like, oh, work must be getting done.
Yeah.
That's not...
I was going to say, and that's not necessarily the case. Well, it's a matter of... And that's the thing, is that it's a matter of... a lot of it is just... what's the word I'm looking for? Wanting to be a watchdog, but... At the end of the day, Derek's exactly right. Just because you're sitting at your desk does not mean that you're working.
No.
And if anything, if people are working from home, there's a higher likelihood that there's going to be some sort, like, that the accountability isn't going to be, are you sitting at your desk by 9 a.m.? It's going to be, show me all the work you did today.
Yeah. Are you getting things done?
Yeah.
I don't care if you're wearing pants or not. Tell me if the work is getting done. Because if I'm working at home, I'm not wearing pants.
I will say, that's what I used to love, that I lived with a guy who worked for a company in New Hampshire, and it was, you know, he worked mostly remotely. Like, I think he went into the office like once a month. But I'd be getting ready for work in the morning, and I'd walk into our kitchen where his desk and his office were in like the corner of the kitchen. He's just sitting there in boxer shorts. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, wait, we have to do a Skype conference. He just tosses a button down shirt over and just still is sitting there in boxer shorts.
Yeah.
Hi, Dave, if you're listening.
I mean, listen, I like going to the office. We have an awesome, awesome commissary in my office. Their beef stroganoff is to die for. It really is. They put it over egg noodles.
The food would be why you like going to your office.
Oh, my God. But no, but I mean, there are other reasons I like going to the office, but we have really, really good food at the office.
Oh, man.
And that's a reason to go in. But at the same time, do I need to be? I mean, I have a 5-minute commute, so I don't care. But a lot of people, given the opportunity, will work from home and will be just as productive working from home. And we can solve the environmental problem. We can solve the traffic problem. We can solve a lot of problems if we pursue this. This may be the catalyst that forces that change in thinking, where more businesses say, you know what? We can't have people at home.
Yeah.
And that's where I say you need to move that to the level where our presidential candidates, Mr. Trump and whomever, have a plank in their platform that says, we're going to get 20% of the cars off the road by 2024 or 2025. 20% of the cars gone. You will make a major, major difference. You will actually do something to help fight air pollution, to help fight fossil fuel consumption, to reduce the amount of carbon that we are dumping into the atmosphere every single day. Speaking of the election, did you watch the clown show last night?
I checked in. I'm really kind of disappointed in Massachusetts right now.
What? Why?
Because I was really thinking we were just like, yeah, Bernie can get it, but
Bernie didn't get it.
Bernie didn't get it.
Bernie ain't gonna get
it. I mean, Bernie. What? But it's just. I mean, I feel like I'm having deja vu of 2016. This is such a, you know, the cover of The Godfather with the marionettes?
Yeah.
The DNC's hands are just like hanging out up there.
You weren't raised to be a communist. What's wrong with you?
I'm not a communist.
You're a communist.
Communist. I am just someone who would like to see a change that not just myself, but many would benefit from.
Socialism?
Socialism, it's not straight up socialism.
Yeah, it is. It is. He
We're
is
not
a socialist.
Be lining up for loaves of bread.
Yeah, we are. If you let Bernie in there, have you seen how well socialism has worked out in South America?
I know socialism bad, but again, it's not. It's a socialist, a democracy with socialistic tendencies.
You want a bomb thrower, is what you want.
I want change, and I don't.
You've got change right now. It comes in an orange package, and all you've done nothing but complain about it.
No, I want change from the orange package.
Yeah, I am not a fan of the orange package. The change came in.
I do not like the orange package.
But I can't argue with the change, which has largely been good. So, you know.
We're not. I don't want to fight with you.
Yes, you do.
I do a little bit.
Yeah, you do.
It's again okay. So, but my beef here. We're right now. We're talking about the primaries. We're not talking. My beef here is again. It is just the exact same. I am not a socialist. What I am.
You're a commie.
What I am is somebody who believes in. Of the people, for the people, by the people.
Okay.
That is something that I believe. And that is something I think should be the case. It was not the case in 2016 with the Democratic primary, nor is it the case right now. This is a well-crafted campaign by a group of people in power who are looking out for their own interests. The reason... And I'm not going to officially endorse any candidate because we don't do that. But what I'm saying is I would prefer if the candidate that gets on the ticket for November were somebody who is strictly driven by and strictly supported as a result of wanting to do the best thing for the American people as a whole.
Yeah, but that's never the candidate.
I know, and it's never the candidate. And that's why I'm getting all... pissy right and, now. And,
but here's the thing. you're lapsing into conspiracy theory here.
I don't think that I would say conspiracy
theory. Well, I mean, you've used the Godfather cover, you know, with the marionette allegory on this. This was the people.
But this was the people. Okay, I'm not saying, obviously it was the people. This was people voting.
The people spoke yesterday. They said Joe Biden.
But would they have said that were it not for things? And I'm not talking about South Carolina. South Carolina, totally different story. But I'm saying, would the people have chosen Joe Biden were it not for very specific and deliberate, I'll say... spoon-fed influence, let's put it that way, by a certain organization whose interest is served by Joe Biden getting on the ticket instead of Bernie Sanders?
I don't think so.
I do.
And here's where I'll argue against that. Number one, they didn't have an opportunity to do that, really.
They did a little.
What happened over the weekend?
It was, trust me, it was definitely last minute and right before, but that doesn't...
What happened over the weekend was somewhat extraordinary because they cleared the lanes for Joe Biden. Klobuchar gets out. Buttigieg gets out. I was going to vote for Pete. I can say that
some
now
people
he's not
still
running.
Did, which I thought was adorable.
My wife.
Like, hey guys, like you gotta watch the news.
My wife, who voted early,
Molly. Oh yeah, well she voted early,
and then was upset that she couldn't vote again. Because she voted. She's like, the absentee people get to vote again. And I said, I told you not to vote early. And she insists on doing it. She's learned her lesson. No more early voting. Don't vote early. I've said this. It's like drafting your fantasy team in August. And then Peyton Manning breaks his neck.
Yeah, I was going to say, and then Peyton Manning dies.
Yeah, that's why you don't draft until after
Knock
the preseason
on wood, Peyton
is
Manning,
done.
I don't want you to die.
You draft after the preseason, not before. Same thing with early voting. You don't know who's going to be on the ballot. I mean, if it's a marquee name, if you were a Bernie supporter and you went out and voted early, yeah, that guy's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
We knew Elizabeth Warren was going to be on the ballot here.
Just because she's so damn stubborn.
But there definitely was a clearing of the lanes for Joe Biden. But that should have still left him vulnerable to Mike Bloomberg. And the thing that struck me wasn't so much that Biden performed poorly as the fact that Mike Bloomberg performed really poorly.
Yeah, like really poorly.
You know, what did he spend? $500 million or $400 million? He won American Samoa. That's, you know.
That's the only one he won.
And he came in second in some places. I think there's more to that story. I think for Mike Bloomberg, it's about the organization that he built, that he's going to hand the keys to Joe Biden and give Joe Biden the clear runway. But if you look at Bernie's performance everywhere, except for Vermont, which is his home state. If you look at Bernie's performance everywhere else, he was never polling much above 33%. And you know the math we talk about on this show.
Yes.
You can probably quote it by now. 30-30-40. 30% hard left, 30% hard right, 40% in the middle.
And the 40 is the important.
Bernie never got out of that 30%. And the reason that Bernie was able to get ahead on that 30% is because he owns that 30%. That 30%.
We are quite loyal to.
The 30% of the progressive vote.
I put myself in the 40% in the middle.
Yeah, but you're Bernie loyalist.
You know, I guess that.
And here's the thing. He's still got that, and he's always going to have that. What he doesn't have is all of the other votes that you need to get over the hump. Those people are all saying Joe Biden because there's no alternative to Biden anymore. And as for Elizabeth Warren, I don't know why she's still in this. Should have walked away this morning. She's trying to do this weird hybrid thing where she is an establishment progressive. And you can't be that. Those are mutually exclusive. Either you want to destroy the establishment with socialism and taxation.
Or you are the establishment.
And social programs. Or you want to back up the establishment. Well, we know where Biden sits. Biden's like, hey, let Wall Street keep making money. Maybe they'll give some to the black people who like me. Bernie Sanders would actually be a better vote.
Maybe they'll go. That's just a funny sentence. I'm sorry.
Bernie Sanders would actually be a better vote for those people. But they're voting with Biden because in the South, we know that he's got the people who follow elections and are deep into politics know that there is the Southern Black Church Network. You get in with one, you get in with all of them. And you watch Joe Biden just sweep through all of those states on the strength of the black vote because he's got it. Because all Barack Obama has to do is call up one pastor and say, Joe Biden. And that message gets out to all those churches. Yeah. And they all show up and they all say, Joe Biden. I'm not surprised Biden won Virginia, which is a suburb of Washington, D.C. He was going to take all the federal employees. They were just going to line up for him. South Carolina obviously was going to go to Joe Biden.
Yeah. That was a foregone conclusion.
You've got that black church network. Bernie showed some strength in, you know, he won Nevada. He won California.
I was going to say, I knew he was going to win California.
That's a big one. That's a big one. Won Colorado. So he's got his pockets of support. But they tend to be progressive, out-of-touch places that aren't doing terribly well.
I would say, I mean, theoretically, you think about it, yeah, that's kind of Colorado and California.
You can see the rest of the West Coast going for Bernie. I mean, Oregon and Washington are his to lose. I don't know how well he does in the Midwest. It doesn't matter how well he does in places like Montana, North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, Wyoming, because they're going to back Trump anyway.
I was going to say, because they're already going to Trump.
Yeah, it's like you could win those, but
because of our super cool electoral college.
Come November, it's not going to make any difference because those are going to be Republican states. So I don't see conspiracy.
Where I see conspiracy is, I'll give you an example. Well, I shouldn't say conspiracy because that is a very strong word. Where I see very purposeful attempted influence, I'll put it that way, possibly having effect is in people, like, for example, somebody in my office yesterday, even said, she said, you know what? I really don't know what I'm going to do. I'm just going to get into the voting booth and whatever I feel in that moment, that's who I'm going to vote for. Now, she ended up voting for Bernie. But I think about it in terms of, like, say you haven't had McDonald's in like 6 months. Even though you drive by McDonald's every day.
My blood pressure is down by 15 points.
Well, like, you haven't had McDonald's 6 months, even though you drive by McDonald's every single day.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden, one night, you're watching the news, a McDonald's commercial comes on in the middle of it. The next day, you drive by that McDonald's, all of a sudden, you know, you might pull in. You might go to that drive-thru and grab yourself a six-piece chicken nugget.
Hawaiian Whopper.
But, you know, and that is what I was implying, is that not that you're going to suddenly change somebody's mind in a day, but for people whose minds weren't totally made up and were kind of on the, I'll see how I feel when I get there, it had influence. It definitely, it was the McDonald's commercial that's making you pull up to the drive-thru.
There's probably some truth. I mean, there's probably some truth to that. Because you did have Buttigieg and Klobuchar very publicly,
yes, and these
throw their support to Bernie over the weekend,
and these are
or throw their or support to Biden over the weekend,
and these yeah. That's what I'm getting at. And these are people that I think it was a foregone conclusion, again using that phrase, but that they probably weren't going to win their spot, the spot on the ticket, but that they did have supporters. You were Mayor Pete. You love Mayor Pete.
I love Mayor Pete. I still love Mayor Pete.
And I thought Klobuchar was, like I told you when I took that test on CNN.com, like, how do you, like, how does what you feel go with each candidate, blah, 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 blah. It said that I should vote for Klobuchar.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's not their opinion and their, and people's opinion of them is significant. It's not nothing.
Amy Klobuchar is somebody, she's a wonk, and it doesn't translate, you know, she's
I'm sorry, the phrase wonk.
I know, but she's like, she's a policy nerd, and she doesn't translate well to the American people. She's somebody who should be like Secretary of Health and Human Services, or, you know, Secretary of the Interior, or high-level cabinet post, you know, maybe Supreme Court. But she just doesn't. You don't look at her and say, oh, that's a president.
That's a president. Oh, yeah. You know? And that's why I'm saying it was already set in stone that she wasn't going to get this, that she wasn't going to bring this home. But she is. She'd be great in the cabinet. She'd be great. Right.
But here's the thing. Even with all of that momentum to Biden, Bloomberg is still out there. And no one knew what was going to happen with Mike Bloomberg. Mike Bloomberg should have been a viable candidate. And I don't think he was, because Elizabeth Warren excoriated him and disemboweled him in front of a national audience in that first debate. I mean, she just shredded the guy.
The best tweet that I've seen through all of this so far is, hey guys, I had to sleep. How'd the rest of the roast of Mike Bloomberg go last
night? Exactly. Exactly. And it's
such gold.
Even given that he was a little better in the second debate, she still came out with that, well, you told her to kill the baby line. And it's like, this is one of the problems with the Warren campaign, by the way, is because I hear from Warren supporters all the time, well, we like her because she's kind and she cares about people. Well, then what is that?
Yeah, then
what is that? Why does she behave the way that she does, where she will say anything and everything to get attention in the middle of these debates? And accused Bernie Sanders of saying that a woman would never be president. And Bernie Sanders disputed that.
Yeah.
And Elizabeth Warren, you know, at least here in the Commonwealth, voters see her as having a fragile relationship with the truth over the whole Native American thing. So anytime one of these things comes out and the target denies it, here in Massachusetts at least, we look at it and we say, oh, I believe the person she accused, and Elizabeth is lying again. And I don't think that did her any favors. The fact that she finished third is devastating.
In her home state.
Yeah. Because you know what that tells me? That if you ran any other reasonable Democrat against Elizabeth Warren for her Senate seat, Elizabeth Warren would lose. She would lose. And by the way, we're going to have a spare Democrat after the primary for Ed Markey's seat. And it's probably going to be Ed Markey. I don't know this, but Kennedys usually don't run if they're not going to win. But you're either going to have a Kennedy or a Markey sniffing around for a Senate seat. Mike Capuano's on the sidelines looking for something to do. Marty Walsh may have ambitions beyond mayor. I don't think you could run him as a Senate candidate. But I could see him trying.
Yeah.
There is an opening there. And make no mistake, people in the Democratic Party in Massachusetts are looking at what happened last night. And they're saying, you know what? We can beat Elizabeth Warren.
Oh, yeah. She, like, both her being in this race at all and her utter inability to gracefully bow out.
Yeah.
is basically she's shot herself in the foot a great deal on this.
I think she did a lot of damage to herself and to her reputation. It was not a well-run campaign. There were some significant missteps. She did not come off as likable in a lot of cases. I know her supporters have a blind spot where that's concerned, but I also know people who have historically been Elizabeth Warren supporters who pulled the lever for Joe Biden yesterday. And that says a lot to me moving forward about where her political fortunes are going.
Yeah.
I think it's a pretty fair conclusion at this point that Joe Biden is going to be the nominee.
Yeah.
It is going to take a massive effort for Bernie Sanders, even with the California win, even with locking up the West Coast, which he is likely to do. It is going to take a huge effort for Bernie Sanders to overcome what Joe Biden has now put in motion. And the thing that I find interesting about it is, what is Joe Biden's message? Hello, I'm Joe Biden.
Essentially, yeah. Hey, remember me? I was vice president when that guy that a bunch of you like was president.
And you were Barry Obama's supporter.
I loved Mimi B. Obama.
I know. He was a terrible president, but you still support him.
Will you?
He was a terrible president.
He was not a terrible president.
He was a terrible president. He droned everybody, and he lied about what happened in Benghazi. I can't.
Derek?
I can't move past those things.
We're not going back to a fight from 5 years ago.
I will gladly go back to that fight.
I know you will. Gladly go back to that. That's why I'm shutting it down preemptively.
But here's my question. What is Joe Biden's message?
Aren't I a kick?
Yeah.
That's literally it.
Trump's already calling him Sleepy Joe, and I like that. I may start referring to him as Sleepy Joe as well. Because here's the thing. I look at Joe Biden, and I'm like, you know what? I would love to sit down and have a drink with that guy.
Do I want him to be my president?
I'd invite Joe Biden over for dinner. I'd let Joe Biden watch my kids. All right?
I'd let Joe Biden. I do think he would actually be an excellent babysitter.
I don't look at Joe Biden and get excited. I'm not like, oh, wow, Joe Biden's running for president. It's more like, oh, well, he's there and you can vote for him.
Well, and that's my thing is that, like, in terms of somebody who I think Biden's going to get the nomination. But I think that if anybody of him, Bernie, if anybody had it, even a prayer's chance of beating Trump, it would be Bernie because he's got something.
We're not going to elect a socialist.
He's got, stop calling him a socialist.
He is a self-avowed socialist.
He still believes in the democratic process.
But with huge amounts of socialism in it, which he believes in getting rid of private insurance.
I eat huge amounts of vegetables. I'm not a vegetarian.
He believes in government control of private industry. Those are things that will not fly with the American people. And I'm not saying that they're necessarily terrible, unworkable, horrible, end-of-the-world ideas. But I'm saying you can't sell that to a majority of the American people. He's going to get the 30%. Maybe he's going to get 40%.
But the American people also know that there will be checks and balances. Like, you're looking at it in terms of American people are stupid and think that a president is totalitarian. It's not that he's going to enforce all of this stuff because he's not going to be able to.
Isn't that what the Democrats have been telling us for the last 4 years is that we have a totalitarian president?
Well, if anything, what we sort of do just in that the majority of the Senate is on his side. But if anything, it'll be a nice balance of power. It'll be a nice balance. Having someone like Bernie Sanders in the White House would be a yin and a yang.
If you put Bernie Sanders on the ticket, and this is where, by the way, when you talk about, you know, the Godfather cover and the marionettes and the desire to defeat Bernie. This is where it comes from. It's not necessarily about Bernie Sanders. It's about what Bernie Sanders as the head of the Democratic Party means for every down ballot race in November. It is about keeping control of the House of Representatives. It is about chipping away at the Republican majority in the Senate. If you got Bernie in there, You may as well just pull all of your Democrat candidates and let the Republicans run wild, because they will turn that to their advantage to get a stranglehold in both houses of Congress. And that's the risk with the guy.
Hmm.
Because we're not a socialist country.
Yet. No, I'm just kidding.
But we're not. And I will tell you something. We are never going to be. All right?
I don't know. Of course we're. I mean,
maybe if you got to a point 100 years from now,
George Washington would come back to life and kill us all.
Where 51% of the population of the United States is children of South American immigrants who grew up in socialist dictatorships and think there is such a thing as good socialism or benevolent socialism. Maybe then we could become a socialist country. None of us are going to be alive to see it, because it's that far off in the future. The thing that I think really, really...
Joel shaking his head at Derek right now.
The thing that I think really hurt Bernie, looking at the debates, is his praising Fidel Castro.
That, I'm going to have to agree with you on that.
I think that was a bridge too far. Not for the Bernie voters, but for anybody who is sort of, you know, middle of the road, who was like, yeah, maybe I'll give this guy a shot.
Like, yeah, maybe Bernie.
Yeah. It, because it wasn't quite, well, Hitler made the trains run on time. It wasn't that, but it was in the neighborhood of that.
Yeah.
You know, it was two blocks over and three doors down from that.
You
and
could it's throw like, a football to it.
Hey, you know, Fidel gave the people literacy. He instituted literacy programs while he was simultaneously rounding up and disappearing all of his enemies. So, if you lived, you learned how to read. Great.
That's a big if.
You know, yeah. I'm sure somebody somewhere could find nice things to say about Eduardo Duterte, but they should not be saying them on a debate stage.
Mussolini was an excellent speech maker.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Don't say that in front of the voters. And maybe this is the key to Joe Biden's charm, because Joe Biden's message is, hello, I'm Joe Biden.
It's literally, aren't I a hoot?
If you don't put any policies forward, no one has anything to argue with.
Well, and to be honest with you, in terms of, like, now that you, like, putting it that way, after these past couple of years, there are probably some people that just want to kind of sit there and chill president that's not ruffling too many feathers, not saying a bunch of stupid crap on his Twitter account, not, you know what I mean? Like, there are some people who would like a just like, yeah, I'll just hang out and, like, if you guys need me, I'm here. I can probably do stuff. Like,
I agree with you 100%. I think that is half of the equation. I think that's half of the equation. But I think there's another half of the equation. And the other half of the equation is this. I won't screw up anything Trump did.
That, yeah, I was going to say, that's very true. That's what I'm saying. It's like, he won't do anything. He won't annoy the crap out of us, but he also won't piss off the people who are happy with how things have been going.
Because that was Bloomberg's campaign, by the way. That was Bloomberg's message.
Like, I'm going to undo the last 4 years. And there are a lot of people that are very happy with the last 4 years.
Yeah. Bloomberg's message was
3.5 years as it is, as we're at right now.
Bloomberg's message was, I won't screw it up. I'm not going to touch anything. I'm not going to screw anything up. I'm just going to be a president you can be proud of.
Yeah.
And Buttigieg was kind of getting into that kind of a message. Joe Biden just sits there and nods and smiles for the next 5 months. Yeah, maybe he's got a shot at getting into the White House.
If he sits and nods and smiles for the next 5 months, it'll just be like, hey, here's a great example of what I'm going to do for the next 4 years.
Yeah.
I'm just going to nod and smile. Because at the end of the day, too, I think that a big thing is part of what makes people dislike Trump so much is that we... As much as, yes, it's important who's elected president. We don't want someone crazy. We don't want someone who's going to bring our country crashing and burning to a halt. We also, at the end of the day, where stuff like gets done, like the nitty gritty crap that really affects our day-to-day lives, is Congress.
Yep.
Our president, we want someone who's going to make a nice speech after a mass shooting, who's going to be really cute pardoning that turkey on Thanksgiving.
But you were saying, Trump did more. Trump banned bump stocks and trigger cranks. And that just survived a Supreme Court challenge. And he did that on his own because Congress wasn't doing anything.
But this is what I'm saying. But this is what I'm saying, though, is that it really does bode well to just say to look good in pictures.
Yeah.
To have a good smile, to be able to say something reassuring.
Yeah. To not be tweeting all day long.
Like, I mean, yeah, because at the end of the day, I mean, the reason, like, they've done research about what, at least traditionally before the days of the internet, and I think I touched upon this last week, before the days of the internet, what most greatly influenced, like, people's decision and who they wanted to elect president. Oh, he looks good behind a podium. Like, that was a huge thing. Like, back in, like, getting Kennedy elected. Oh, I recognize his last name. Like,
and the thing with Biden is he does look good behind a podium.
He really does.
He looks good in a press conference. He, you know, when Joe Biden puts on the serious face and says, I'm going to get this done, you look at him, you're like, oh, dad's mad. Yeah, he's going to get that done.
Yeah.
And I think people believe that. The problem is, I don't know a single issue that the guy's running on. Other than, hi, I'm Joe Biden.
I mean, I feel like he just copy-pasted whatever Barack Obama ran on.
I think the best move forward, especially after last night, is if Joe Biden gets elected, he should step down on the day of his inauguration and let Jill be president. Because Jill has proven herself to be, like, maximum badass American. Did you see what Jill did last night?
I did not.
While Joe Biden was giving his speech last night, a couple of vegan protesters stormed the stage. I don't know how vegan protesters are able to storm anything with their limp soy.
I was going to say, like, how do you have the energy?
Yeah, man? With their limp soy-infused vegan bodies. but one would assume there is security somewhere keeping people from storming the stage.
Typically, presidential candidates, we try to, like, you know, protect them.
But as they were wrestling the first one off the stage, the second one came on stage. You'll find the clip online.
I just looked at it.
And Joe Biden just wheels around and grabs this girl and gets her in a lock and steers her away from Joe Biden. There was one football player weighed in and said she had excellent form and should have been a left tackle.
That is... I mean, you want to talk about, like, one of the coolest things you can have said about you. Like,
oh, and hey, she's doing this in a cocktail dress.
Yeah, like, hey, I'm this fancy lady in a cocktail dress. Watch me take this sucker down.
Yeah, I'm like, you know, I am a Jill Biden fan right now. I am totally on board. I want to see Melania throw down against some protesters before I make my choice for president now.
I was going to say, that's what we should do, like the WWE when they do, like, the cage match. Jill and Melania. Let's see it happen.
Yeah. Melania is Estonian, isn't she?
Yeah, I believe so.
Some of those countries, they make everybody serve in the military.
Yeah, I was gonna say some of them do.
So she may know how to kill a man with her bare hands.
Yeah, she may be a sleeper cell.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say that, but she may have been trained in, like, how to kill somebody with your bare hands. So, you know, I think we need, like,
I'd like that in a first lady.
but it's not just that Jill Biden is manhandling a woman handling or man whatever
it, handling.
It's not just that she's, like, shutting down this protester. She's looking good doing it.
Oh yeah,
you know.
She, I would say that is. I mean, yeah, she is dressed up. She's not in a yoga pants and a sweatshirt.
Yeah. Guys, you want a wife that will defend you like this. Trust me.
While keeping it hot.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just like, I want that photo. Or really, they should blow that up. That should just be the campaign ad.
Honestly,
Biden.
I was going to say, like, it really, it's a very, I'm looking at this, this is very cool.
Yeah.
It reminds me of a...
Take that, vegans.
There's a...
I mean, granted, it's not hard to fight back against a vegan because they have no muscle tone, but the vegans are really mad right now.
There's a, I'm trying to remember what the football player is, the basketball player rather. Oh, it's Dwayne Wade. There was this picture, I was going to say, I don't know why this is exactly what it reminds me of. There's this picture of Chrissy Teigen and John Legend at a Miami Heat game, and Dwayne Wade literally falls on them. and somebody had it blown up and like professionally framed and gave it to them for Christmas. This is what we should do for the Bidens. Yeah. Like, give them that. Yeah.
That should be a White House Christmas card right there. It's like Jill Biden throwing down against the vegans.
Oh,
hey,
man.
Hey, Joe's a meat and potatoes kind of guy. I used to call him Lunchbox Joe.
I was going to say, he's like, you look at him and he's just, yeah, he's...
Joe's relatable.
I was going to say, he's just a very, like, I could picture delivering his newspaper.
Yeah. Joe is a guy that has stepped out of one of those old Norman Rockwell Saturday Evening Post cover illustrations or cover paintings. And you look at that, you're like, oh, that's America. That's what, you know.
America.
That's what presidents should look like. I just want to know where he stands on the issues. And
that
you know,
is typically something that you expect to find out about somebody running for
president. Yeah, and at this point, I don't know because everyone was too busy attacking Bernie and attacking. So the next debate should be interesting.
Yeah.
Because at a minimum, we're going to have Bernie and Biden throwing down. Elizabeth Warren
might still be there.
Might still show up and chip at everybody.
Girl,
we'll see.
Come on. No one to gracefully bow out.
Yeah, really should. But now the
At this point, though, gracefully is just taken out. There's no grace left in this.
But now the interesting thing is people are making fun of Mike Bloomberg. You know, this guy spent $400 million, won American Samoa. But as I mentioned, he built a campaign organization that is national, that is the envy of every other campaign in the Democrat Party. And he is now... handing the keys to that
to Joe Biden.
To Joe Biden.
Well, that's something that I felt that he put it very eloquently when he bowed out today, which is that he said, Bloomberg said he got into the race to defeat Donald Trump and he was leaving for the same reason.
Yeah.
So basically, he recognized, all right, it's not going to be me, but I think this dude can do it. So I'm just going to bow out so that this can happen with somebody.
So here's the thing. If Mike Bloomberg has built some sort of sophisticated data-driven machine that can elect presidents, how much is that going to be worth?
Mm-hmm.
Mike Bloomberg may have just made his next $1 billion in less than six...
Okay, what a great business move running for president.
In less than 6 months... For an investment that is $400 million is a fraction of the amount of money that everyone else has spent trying to figure this out. So there may be a long game here for Mike Bloomberg. It'll be interesting to see what happens. And we will find out in the weeks and months ahead. It is WMFO Medford. When we come back, see it, skip it, rent it, the movies that are coming out this week. Then on the Tell Mikey D, everything you need to know about the Boston music scene coming up very shortly here on WMFO Medford. Is this the right one? Is that the right
Got
one?
The fever. Saturday Night Fever. Paramount Pictures presents Saturday Night Fever, starring John Travolta as Tony Manero, the king of the discos. Every guy wants to dance like him. Every girl wants to be with him. Saturday Night Fever. Catch it. Rated R. Under 17. Not admitted without parent.
I'm Sarah, and this is my story.
I'm Ellen, and this is my story. One night, I was at a bar.
I was having fun with my friends.
I had one too many drinks.
I got behind the wheel to go home.
I got a cab to go home.
All of a sudden, from out of nowhere, a squirrel ran across the road. It happened so quickly, I barely had time to react.
The cabbie barely had time to react. The cab swerved.
I can't believe it. I hit a guy.
I cannot believe it. The cabbie just missed a guy.
I wish I took a cab.
Thank goodness I took a cab.
You have the choice to save a life. Don't drive buzzed. It's a decision you'll never regret. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
Disco movies.
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. We are wrapping things up here at The Big Picture, but before we go, we are going to tell you whether we would see it, stream it, or skip it about each of the films coming out this weekend.
I'm changing the title of this sequence.
Yes, you are.
For a couple of weeks, anyway.
Topical.
We're going to make it topical, and the new title of the sequence is going to be, should you risk coronavirus to see this movie? Because if you go out to the theater and you're breathing that delicious recirculated air, you don't want to be in there with somebody who's got the thing.
Yeah, very true.
So we got two movies that are opening up this weekend. The first is Onward. This is the latest from Pixar. Mm-hmm. There's already huge controversy around this because the million moms are upset that there's a gay character.
Oh, no.
They're crazy. And
perish the thought.
Yeah. What? Disney is trying to normalize gays. Folks, gays are normal. It's been normalized for a while. Anyway, two kids get a staff and bring their dad's legs back. And they got 24 hours to go get the rest of them. Adventure and hilarity ensues.
Oh, yeah.
Shay, are you risking the coronavirus to see this movie?
Negatory, but I will probably eventually watch it with my nieces on Netflix.
The Pixar content has just been...
every review is like, it's not classic Pixar level, but it's not terrible. Like, that's basically been the
It's like teenage buddy road trip movie, and they're brothers, and they got their dad's legs, so there's a Weekend with Bernie thing.
I was
going to
say
it.
A little bit of Weekend with Bernie.
And it's like
Weekend of Bernie Springsteen.
Yeah, you know, it's the sort of thing that looks good on paper. And they got, you know, Tom Holland doing one of the voices for this. He's Spider-Man. I just look at the trailer for this and I'm like, really? This is the best you got?
This is what we're doing?
It's not. Pixar tends to be at their best when they're doing something high concept. Okay? WALL-E is one of the best movies they've ever made because it's a silent film. And it's a silent film reimagined for a 21st century audience. Mm-hmm. And it works. You can turn the sound off and watch that and understand everything that is happening in it. And it's brilliantly done. Inside Out, I'm not crazy about the film. I know a lot of people who love it to death. And it's an interesting concept. You know, Monsters, Inc., I love. Mm. You got the whole big climax where they're chasing through all the doors that lead to the kids' bedrooms. They're great when they do that stuff. Wreck-It Ralph, I thought, was good for
Wreck-It Ralph.
Was good for the first half, and then it turned into a candy movie. And it's like, I wanted you to be a video game movie and not a candy movie. Why are we doing all this candy stuff? I haven't seen two yet, but Wreck-It Ralph, good, high concept, liked it. So this looks like something that anybody else would do. DreamWorks could make this film. Illumination could make this film. Anybody could make this film. There's nothing about it that I look at and say, ooh, Pixar, other than the name that's on it.
Yeah.
And the track.
Other than that it says Pixar.
Yeah. So the other one we got this weekend is The Way Back. Ben Affleck plays drunk.
Wow, that's going to be a stretch for him.
In Hollywood, there are two competing theories of acting. As you've been out there. You know this. Mm-hmm. One is the actor goes to the character. And the other is they bring the character to the actor. I'll leave it up to the audience to figure out what they've done with this Ben Affleck movie. But he's a drunk. He used to play high school basketball, and he was good. And then he walked away from it. Now he has a chance to coach his former high school's team. And wouldn't you know it, Shay Spillane, but the team is a bunch of dysfunctional, down on their luck kids from the bad side of the tracks.
Dare we use the term ragtag?
Yeah. Plucky, I think, comes in here. Plucky, ragtag crew.
Underdogs.
Yeah. Are you risking the coronavirus?
Do you have to ask?
It's actually, here's the thing, it's actually getting really good reviews.
It is, but I mean, I'll watch the 19 other versions of this movie that are streaming.
This is the thing. This is the scrappy underdog sports movie for Generation Z. Mm. That's exactly what this is. And the one thing I can tell you about that movie is sooner or later you're going to see it whether you want to or not.
Oh, yeah.
It's either going to be on cable and you're going to watch it, or it's going to be on streaming and you're going to watch it. You will be surrounded by this movie all of next winter.
I was going to say, it's going to be just like how I saw the first couple Harry Potter movies, where it's just going to be like on TBS at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday.
Exactly. And you can go see it now and get a jump on it, or you can just let
just wait for it to get